Andrea Fraser is an artist whose work has been identified with performance art, context art, site specificity, and institutional critique. Since the mid-80s, she has created performances, installations, publications, and projects with institutions including museums, galleries, foundations, international survey exhibitions throughout the United States, Europe, and Latin America. Between 1996 and 1986, she was also a member of the performance group The V-Girls. Andrea Fraser works, 1985 to 2003, was a retrospective exhibition organized by the Kunstverein in Hamburg in 2003 with a catalog published by Dumont. And most recently, MIT Press has released a collection of Andrea's writings. It's called Museum Highlights, The Writings of Andrea Fraser, edited by Alex Albero, and with a foreword by Pierre Bourdieu. And after this lecture today, there will be a reception for that new book. So I'm very, very happy to introduce Andrea Fraser. Thank you, Andrea, for an exemplary introduction. It is indeed difficult to imagine what a critical art practice could be at the beginning of the new millennium. One factor in the demise of radical practice may be art's own collaboration with the forces of spectacle culture. If visibility has become art's primary horizon of aspiration, then for any radical aesthetic practice to be historically convincing, it must now define itself in opposition to that culture. Tonight, we are considering an artist whose project meets this criterion, an artist whose interventions invite the viewer to recognize the fundamental conditions of art and its inability to resolve its contradictions as a radical contestation of the hegemonic ordering of experience. His practice demonstrates that the desire to commemorate, which he inscribes as a grotesque echo of the fate of radical critique, is itself inextricably bound up with forms of culturally engineered adulation operating at the very center of artistic production and reception. He thus inverts and counters all of the artistic fallacies that hindsight and history have made evident. Indeed, it would be difficult to conceive of any practice that could surpass his as a synthesis of the most complex and radical artistic projects of the recent past, as well as the early 20th century. And it is a special privilege to have him here today. Thank you. I don't want to sound coquettish. I mean, this could easily come off the wrong way. But, you know, as an artist, I'm most disappointed. I mean, even though I say the end result isn't important, I'm never satisfied. But I guess that's why I keep trying. You know, as an artist, I try to create an autonomous space in which a critical position can be made clear. You know, people come to see my work. Maybe they're willing to spend some time. I hope I can make people feel involved, you know. But it's not about interactivity. I mean, I give something to people, but I don't expect communication. I want to make people think, but I don't want to be didactic. You know, I don't want to make political art. I don't want to intimidate or exclude people. I want to implicate people in my work. I mean, in the world, you know. That's my political statement. Because what's important is not what people see in my work. It's what they see when they confront reality again, okay? Because I work in reality. So why am I an artist? I guess I'm an artist because I take a critical position toward the world. I mean, it's not about hope, okay? It's about showing my disgust for the dominant discourse. How much information can you receive from one artist in a few minutes? Usually, when an artist talks about his work, it lessens the allure, but that's hardly the case in this case. His friendly bombardment is really an art experience in itself. The simultaneity of thoughts passing through the brain is never easy to capture. especially when the brain in question is brilliantly hyperactive. Well, he's in possession of just such a remarkable organ, and no critic can possibly keep up, but I'll try. So those were the first three parts, or two and a half parts, of a performance called Official Welcome, which I first performed in 2001. And like almost all of my work since the mid-1980s, it was constructed largely from quoted material and was based on extensive research. Well, for a number of reasons, to be very engaged with feminism. And at the same time, there was in New York a reconsideration of certain feminist practices from the 70s. And I think I saw as my kind of project as a young artist in the mid-80s to try to bring together this trajectory that was coming out of conceptual art.
I'm trying to find places where I actually
or was beginning to be
can read Andrea, and I've noticed that
and a kind of
she's extremely articulate,
that tended to be rooted in,
but she also
notion of ideology
allows us to see
and a kind of,
her internal workings.
Engagement with institutional structures. And on the other hand, feminist practices coming out of the 70s, which were often in the form of performance and also film to a large extent, performance and film, that were engaged with an investigation of gender relations and of sexual relations and of gender and sexual positioning and of subject formation. In terms of desire and in terms of fantasy, as well as in terms of the social conditions of gender construction and positioning. And
extreme identification sounds good to me.
Synthesizing the research into a form that can then be re-spoken and performed, but also performing or enacting in the performance an increasingly sort of extreme identification with that discourse. And with the museum. And so the next, I'll show you just another short section that gives you an example of what I mean by that.
Place to escape anymore. No civilized oasis. This corridor houses some of the museum's public facilities. The coat room, to my left the washrooms, the telephones. It doesn't really have a name, but down the hall here we have the Muriel and Philip Berman drawing and print galleries. They were named as part of the museum's donor recognition program. The museum, you know, provides prospective donors with a veritable cornucopia of namespace opportunities. Here, for example. For $750,000, you could name the museum shop. You know, I'd like to name a space. Why, if I had $750,000, I would name this shop Andrea. Andrea is such a nice name. This is our museum shop, Andrea, named in 1989 by Mrs. John P. Castleton, a one-time museum guide and eternal art appreciator. Jane, as she was called, always liked to say that patronage creates a personal sense of ownership in the beautiful home of the arts, uniting the most enlightened spirits in the community in a high devotion to the public good. Did you know her? To know her was to love her. She was special. With her long stride and tailored profile, a blonde of medium height dressed in understated refinement, incredibly finished. She often carried a briefcase, apologizing. Her voice surprised, deep and husky and resonant with emotion, drawing out and lingering over the vowels. A serious student, humble,
hungry, analytic. She read and would look and invite us to look. There was time to see more clearly. Oh, I've known happiness, intense happiness, exquisite happiness. Here in the museum, beside these tiles, or across the room from those, or over here between these two. It's nice to feel alive. I'd like to live like an odd object. Wouldn't it be nice to live like an odd object? A sophisticated composition of austere dignity, vitality, and immediate quality.
But for me, it's the opposite extreme within the same terrain of contradiction. And that is a piece called Untitled that I produced in 2003. And Untitled began when I asked one of my art galleries, my art dealer in New York City, to try to find a private collector who would be interested in essentially pre-buying a piece. Pre-buying a piece that would involve his participation. And that participation would be having sex with me and documenting the encounter. And my gallery actually fairly, I think they only proposed it to one person, and he accepted. galleries are sort of, that's the role of galleries. See, galleries can't just be offering art. You can't offer video to a painting collector. You can't offer painting to a video collector. You have to sort of match up the collector and the artist. And my gallery managed to do that fairly efficiently in this case. The piece was called Untitled, and it was recorded in early 2003. And the result was a 60-minute videotape that I presented unedited, except without sound. And there was a single camera installed in a hotel room where I met with the collector. And there's no camera movement. So this is a still from the video. And this is an installation view. So it was presented on a single, the installation specifications is that it can only be shown on a monitor of a certain size, not a big monitor, and it can't be projected, that it's to be shown in a room without seating, preferably by itself, with all the lights on. and it was produced in an edition of five. And the collector who participated in the piece and pre-bought the first edition. I started out referring to it as a commission and saying that I asked my dealer to arrange a commission for me with a private collector that would involve sex and documenting the encounter on videotape. But in fact, it wasn't technically a commission. Commission implies a kind of passive position for me. And in fact, my position was very active. My function was very active. In the whole process. And so, in fact, technically, in terms of what galleries do and the kinds of sales that are made, it's more correct to say that it was pre-bought by the collector. Because one of the ways of looking at Untitled is that in it, one of the things I'm sort of doing is sort of performing. Some of the freedoms that are traditionally associated with an artistic career. It goes back to the Impressionists. Baudelaire said, what is art? Prostitution. Impressionist painting is filled with representations of prostitutes and the world of prostitutes. And associated with a kind of freedom to enjoy, as Freud would put it, instinctual satisfaction. That is provided for by an artistic career, the freedom to transgress. At the same time, however, I suppose the sort of basic element of this piece, of course, is the economic exchange and the fact that to the extent that all those freedoms are enjoyed and manifest in the form of works that exist as commodities, and our bod and soul, they are also at the same time subject to a reification, to a commodification. And to the extent that artists sort of subject themselves to that, they are also at the same time subjecting themselves to a kind of extreme instrumentalization, or potentially in those relationships. Well, this is what I'm trying to sort of enact in this. For me, really, it was not a fun project. There was nothing satisfying about it personally. It was painful. It was a lot of work, and it was painful. But in a sense, in order to protect my autonomy, and in this piece, I'm at the opposite extreme, sort of, performing my fantasies, but at the same time subjecting myself to a very extreme kind of instrumentalization.
There's so much more. Wish we had more than 15 minutes, but go, Andrea.